Dear listeners, I'm afraid one of our recording devices failed to do its job while recording the show on Sunday. I have done my best with the audio available, but I felt it wasn't any point in re-recording the show, especially as Robert had stayed up to the early hours of the morning to do it. So I do apologise about the hum and the poor quality sound, but I have done my best.
Services, Lavazzi and Boom1.co.uk present the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Hello and welcome to the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast, episode 422. I'm Adam, and evil, infinite evil, and here's Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
No, I'm just saying that a lot of the time you don't really make sense.
And Mary Lang.
New technology dates so quickly these days.
That's a good one.
And we were hoping to have Robert on, but he's sort of, I think he might have fallen asleep because it's 2:30 in the morning in Australia. Right, so this week we're looking at the Keeper of Traken. I say looking at it, we're sort of talking about it while looking at it. Well, you know what I mean. It's, we're looking at it. Oh, never mind, it's gone. Right, so straight into the Traken of Keeper, which begins with... if you hear anything from Robert, do let me know and I'll try and bring him in. It begins with a title sequence and then Adric with a new hairstyle is watching the... because they're back in end space now. Watching the monitor screen.
And by this point, his hair had grown out. He didn't have to use the wig anymore.
Yeah. Probably he would have stopped with the wig, to be fair, the way it looks. I do love the coat stand, which I forgot to mention on the last episode, which has the Doctor's old costume on it.
Yes.
And anyway, so we see lots of talking between the Doctor and Adric. And I have to say, well, I remember that Adric's a bit irritating in this story, which is probably why I remember him as being an irritating character, because in this story I found him quite irritating. I'll point out a few moments of irritation later on in the story.
He didn't irritate me at all in this story.
Yeah, he didn't irritate me at
all. I'll tell you what the times I'm talking about later on. Anyway, the Keeper of Traken appears in the TARDIS.
Professor Chronotis.
Yes. One of the eggheads appears in the TARDIS. A bit of a miserable sod, isn't he, really, to be fair. And
when he showed up, Fred just kind of went because of his appearance. Just he's so ugly.
Oh, well, he's not supposed to be, you know, scary, is he?
Well,
and he does look extra, considering how powerful he is. He does look a bit frail. But anyway, sorry, Gabby, you were saying.
I'm just saying she found him a bit strange looking. Unfortunately, she wasn't able to finish the story with me. She watched episodes 1 and 2, so she still doesn't know what happens.
Well, she'll have to watch episode 2 and 3 and 4 then afterwards.
Yes, I'll force her to do that because she's seen
the
guy.
Robert's about to come on. Hang on.
Right.
I love live podcasting. It's great fun, isn't it? Right, okay, let's see if we can get him on. What's his name again?
I don't know.
Right, here we go. I'm calling Australia. Is anybody there in Australia? But no, it's spinning around and not being answered. Unless he's...
Maybe he has a different Skype.
He may well do, and that might... Oh, no, he may indeed have his usual Skype connection and actually be there after all. Or not. His face is up on the screen, but...
His face is on the screen?
It's like he's not talking or anything. Maybe he's accidentally muted his microphone.
Or maybe his Skype needs updating.
I seem to remember Robert was rather prolific at accidentally muting his microphone while
yes.
Skyping. Which I think is what he's actually done at this point. Because he is there, I can see his little choppers, there he is, Nick. But I can't hear him. Can you hear him, guys?
No.
No, this makes great podcasting, it really does. So while he figures out how to unmute himself... I'm going to continue
with... Tell him on Messenger that we can't hear him.
Well, I would have thought he can hear us.
Maybe not.
I bet he can. Come on, dogs. Oh, I've got a ding.
Me.
This is...
No, that's me.
Oh, it's you. Kirby. Thanks for that, Kirby, yes. Oh, good grief.
And it was just seen by him.
Yes, I should hope so, too. Anyway, moving back. Star, right, if you're going to sit there, I'm shutting you out. Right. So... Yeah, so they're basically the keeper of Traka, and says that more or less implies that he tells the Doctor and Adric the story of what's happened on the planet with the Melka and Cassia and that shenanigans, and more or less invites the Doctor to Traka, to don't know what he's up to, but Primus meanwhile has married Cassia. Nyssa doesn't look too bothered about. Know the prospect of a very young stepmother.
Yeah, and what happened to her mother? Do we ever know?
I would presume she's dead.
She was adopted by both of them, so what happened to her previous father, too?
Oh, not
no,
sure he's adopted by both.
Is her father.
I thought that she was given to both of them.
Oh, interesting, Mary. I didn't pick up on that one.
I mean, that's what I remember from watching it. Was that she was kind of handed over as the adopted daughter of
it's
both.
A revelation.
I could be wrong.
Oh, okay. Anyway, so so I think they've just got married because all the John Woodnuts and the woman that was in Aztecs story were there to sort of toast their marriage. And Kirby isn't actually disagreeing with my comments there, so I'm rather proud of myself.
No, I'm not.
What?
What should I?
Well, normally you do.
And I only found out about an hour ago. I was looking through the cast list and realized that John Woodnut was who else he's played.
He's played a couple of major characters.
The Zygon stories. Zygon.
Yes, and he was also in Spearhead from Space.
Yes.
Is that a cat?
Yes, no? That was okay. A cat.
Can I move on? And has Robert sorted out his audio issues yet?
No.
No, how weird. He needs to plug his microphone thing in, doesn't he? Anyway, moving on. Wouldn't it be fascinating and exciting when he gets connected?
Robert says, I'm going to have to pick up my microphone. The one on my headset isn't working. I can hear you lot.
Sorry, my wife distracted me then for a moment.
And he might have to go into the settings in Skype. I know I've had problems with that before.
Yes. Or just
set up the proper microphone.
Yes. But I can't. He must have used it last time. Anyway, we're getting distracted from the story here. So then the keeper turns up to sort of, more or less given their blessing, but he looks a bit cross. Oh, no, it's quite because he's just telling the story to Adric and the Doctor. Sorry, big pardon.
He's just very, very old.
Yeah. Meanwhile, there's lots of shots of Cassia sort of worshipping and looking after the Melka statue. And lots of politics going on. There's also, actually, there's quite a lot of political overtones and undertones to these season 18 stories.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway. Right, so...
I found a reference, by the way, Master.
You did?
When Tremas is... doing the toasts and saying he's drunk more wine than a man of my responsibility should. He then says, to be a consul and a father I thought were duties enough, but now once again to be a husband.
Oh.
So
he's implying that probably, he is in fact Nyssa's dad.
Yes.
Okay. Like being right, don't you, Kirby?
Okay.
Anyway,
it's where she was handed over to both of them, so whatever.
I want to predict something here because I do hope that Alan is going to provide his usual standard of feedback for this particular episode. And I've got a funny, because this is a story of political overtones and undertones, that he's going to work Brexit into the into the review, shall we say. Anyway, right, so basically the keeper is dying, so they're sort of starting to plan for replacement keeper. And Tremus, who has a very very suspicious sort of anagram to his name.
Yes.
Shall we say, a suspicious and fairly obvious anagram. Yeah.
Well, as I said, Fred hasn't picked up on that.
Oh,
yet.
Well, that's interesting. Yeah. So he's
the first time I saw it.
He's next in line for keepership. But I will say, I do like the way that even though Cassia gets very quickly sort of taken over by the Melker, she still maintains this love for Tremus, and for a while anyway. Obviously, Tremus is made into sort of criminal, he loses the right to become keeper. She's really pleased because that means she's not going to lose him, sort of thing. You know?
That was kind of the whole business that was Melker's and Master's reason or the hook into controlling her.
Yeah. Anyway, I'm trying to move forward a bit. Anyway, they summon the keeper just as the Doctor and Adric have arrived because they're a bit suspicious of the Doctor and Adric, so they're going to want to ask the keeper who the Doctor and when if they're okay and if they're going to be villains or anything. So brilliant work by the Keeper of Traken. So to get distracted by the fact that the Melker is peering through the crack in the doorway, and instead of answering the question about the Doctor and Adric, says evil, infinite evil, and of course that leads the team of politicians to believe that they're talking about the Doctor and Adric.
How many times have we seen the same plot thing here, where the person who invites the Doctor in doesn't bother to mention it to anybody else, so that the Doctor is always considered a, you know, an enemy, a villain when he shows up on the scene.
Yeah, I know. Now, somebody's fiddling with something. I bet that's you, Kirby, because I know it's not me, and I think Mary is a bit too busy.
What am I supposed to be fiddling with?
I can hear things being... Oh,
maybe
that.
It's Robert trying to make a connection.
I think it's Robert trying to do something.
Robert, are you trying to make a connection? Well, maybe he can't hear us. This is very strange. Maybe he's watching the late live feed on Facebook, but actually can't... Yes?
Getting back to an observation.
Yes?
Anyone else besides me notice that in the council, the guy who, Luvik, I believe is the name of the character, that his hairstyle looked...
That's Robert. We can hear Robert tapping his keyboard. Can you tell him we can hear him tapping his keyboard? Sorry.
Anyway, Luvik's hairstyle looked like the same wig as Alcon had two stories ago.
No, it might have been.
Wow. Well, maybe the BBC is saving a bit of money. Oh, he's going to restart his computer, he says.
Yep.
Okay.
I mean, you're famous for pointing out props that have been used over and over again. So, you know, maybe this is just the same thing.
Possibly.
Yeah. But anyway, so he says, evil, infinite evil. Of course, they all close in on the Doctor and Adric with their ferocious guns. And
something surprised me. Why does a peaceful civilization even have guns?
Very, very good point.
But you know, that's the funny thing is that they talk about how peaceful they are, and yet within seconds, maybe a minute after they say, oh, but maybe we should arm the Fosters, bam, there they are with full loaded guns. It's like, whoa.
Yeah. And they've got prisons and the death penalty. And,
yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, right, so the next episode starts off with a bit where, you know, the consoles are sort of walking menacingly away from the console, I suppose you call it, towards the Doctor and Adric. And in the previous version that they did in the end of episode one, the Doctor and Adric just stand there stunned while these people close in their guns. This version, the Doctor pipes up with some typical Doctor words to stall the inevitable execution. And also, I think you're pointing out, my dear friends from across the pond, they've encircled the Doctor and Adric with these guns. So if they shoot Doctor and Adric, aren't they not going to therefore possibly shoot themselves as well?
Yes. Didn't the Doctor just demonstrate that in the last story? If you get the two guys attacking you close enough.
Anyway, of course, cool. So Cassia
also,
gets...
Also,
sorry.
They obviously remounted the whole scene, or shot it twice, because even the Keeper has slightly different words with his evil infinite evil.
Oh, yes. I didn't notice that either. You're on fire tonight, Kirby.
Ding. Thank you.
No quiz today, so you don't get anything really so solid. Anything coming from the Facebook feed? We've got Joe Briscoe, the Keeper of Tarkin, is one of my favourites of the Tom Baker era. I also found the Melker creepy as a kid. I have to say, the design is brilliant, isn't it, of the Melker itself. That's very ahead of its time. And actually, I think Nissa is one of the most underrated companions.
The Melker design is actually taken from, I understand, a display that was in the Louvre of modern French art, and there was a statue there that looked almost identical to this, and that's what they designed this after, was that statue.
Well, actually, it's Italian. It's by
You're wrong there, Mary.
Okay,
get it right.
Italy, France, you know, what's the difference?
Umberto Boccioni.
Oh, good grief.
There you go.
Laurie Nick says, hi, sweeties.
I was just about to say that when you were going.
And then Laurie Nick said, this podcast is all about fiddling, which is why I love it so much. Back to the real world. Oh, well, to the science fiction and fantasy TV world. Obviously, Cassia, after a conversation with the Melker, is quite keen that the Doctor and Adric get executed, and when they don't, she gets in such a flap, she basically faints. In a very theatrical way. It's quite amusing, actually. Very sort of theatrical, dancey sort of way, you know. So they sit her in a chair, and then Tremus is actually holding something that the Doctor actually wants. I can't remember what it was now. You see,
it senses something, but eventually they use it, and actually the Doctor can tell that there's another TARDIS, although he's confused as far as why there's another TARDIS.
Then we see the Melkor sort of wandering around, which is quite amusing in itself, with its glowy red eyes, and it takes about 5 minutes for the Doctor to convince the consuls that he's okay, you know, you just bang him up in prison for a little while, and because he's a scientist and Tremus is a scientist, they can try and glean some information from each other. So Nissa, I forgot to mention this, has been given a task of dusting the Melker, and of course her attending of Melker upsets the very jealous Cassia, and of course, because Cassia's been sort of looking after the statue for many years, since she was a child even. And then this is the point in which Adric becomes a little bit irritating, is when Nissa and Adric sort of strike up a bit of a friendship, because Adric's quite arrogant and sort of smarmy and sort of irritating, because he knows everything.
He's being a teenage boy in front of an attractive girl.
I don't think he's even noticed she's attractive, but I think he's just sort of being a bit of a know-it-all.
Very typical of the age.
All right, I know. Maybe it's not Matthew Waterhouse and the character of Adric. It's just he is being irritating in this episode. Just saying. Maybe he's supposed to be, I don't know. All right. So then there's a load of political stuff. Sorry, that goes on after that. And then the rather gullible Cassia is given a lovely neck bracelet thingamajig. I suppose
don't
you'd call
it
a necklace. Which she puts on, and then it starts glowing, and she goes all a bit sort of slightly possessed, because now obviously if she does anything that the Melker doesn't like, he can make her sort of feel some pain of some variety. And then we see a shot from inside the Melker with the TV screens that have sort of made her look a little bit like eyes. What clever design that! But then of course the little sort of control panels that just look like something came out of an old power station.
It's whatever they have sitting around in the prop department.
Indeed. Anyway, and some stuff goes on, just moving forward a bit.
Master?
Yes?
I'm confused. Is the Melkor is the grandfather clock inside the Melkor? Or?
No, the Melkor is the TARDIS. It's the Master's TARDIS.
It's just the chameleon circuit is working.
Yes. It's the Master's TARDIS. It's always been working.
Because sometimes when the Melkor appears places, you can hear the TARDIS sound.
Yes.
Yeah.
No, that's unfortunately a fairly obvious sign that it is a TARDIS, because they do that quite early on, don't they?
So the grandfather clock has screens inside that look like eyes.
Very, that's a good point, isn't it? Yeah, I know what you're saying, but
I don't see the grandfather clock until the very end.
Maybe he's got another control room.
Changes from the Melkor to the grandfather clock.
It's just an alternate control room.
Yeah. Just for the sake of it, yeah. It's
got black roundels.
Adric starts creeping around the woods and then gets grabbed by the doctor from behind to stop him from shouting out. And then there's lots of scientific stuff going on. And then there's a point in which John Woodnut's character gets stuck in some sort of beam of some kind and had some pain inflicted on him. Then the keeper turns up. And then there's a funny scene in which Cassie is trying to resist the control of the Melkor. She shuts her eyes, and on her eyelids are some red paint, shall we say.
Yes.
I thought that was quite amusing.
Very convincing.
But they've actually tried to paint in above her shut eyes some more eyelashes, haven't they, to make it look like open eyes. I suppose it was okay. But so she's
it kind of looks like they put in some false eyelashes above
on the top of her lips. And then John Woodnut's character gets done in, I think, and then she gets throttled a little bit by Melka's necklace, and there's lots of trips into the woods with the Doctor and Adric and Tremus. The TARDIS, well, I forgot to mention this, the TARDIS had been sort of dematerialised, didn't it? And then it came back.
It's
and then
slightly
just,
shifted out of time.
Yeah. And then a net drops on the Doctor, Tremus and Adric, which was quite a painful net.
That happened. Fred just laughed when that happened.
Obviously orchestrated by Cassia. And then, that's the end of episode 2. Episode 3 is a fairly long pull back into those scenes.
Master.
Yes.
Of these 4 episodes, they were having a lot of trouble with episodes running over. Episodes 1, 2, and 4 actually came in overtime, so they did a lot of cutting of first lines and last lines from scenes. But this one came in under. So they had to make a longer intro.
Yeah, about 2 minutes worth.
Yes.
Anyway, so there's a scene where that obviously the unconscious Dr. Tremus and Adric have been shoved in a cell, and everybody's sort of lying.
Well, those cells on those peaceful planets,
And the Doctor tries to get out using the sonic screwdriver, but it don't work on wood. At least I presume that's wood. And Cassia is in full. Has a funny scene in which Cassia is having a chat with Melkor. And Nyssa sort of spots it and goes and hides in the woods really badly. Cassie is able to spot this by not even looking. She's sort of she's looking the opposite way and just does a sideways look with her eyes, which you couldn't possibly have seen with her hair and everything in the way. But realizes that Nyssa's there and then pretends to walk away and just dives in the woods and pulls her out, which is really quite a funny scene. And then, of course, another little political meeting. And then they're all manipulating it so as Cassia can set herself up as the keeper of Traken. So eventually the Melkor's reasonably pleased with her, but he's only manipulating her because he intends to kill her. And they find this scroll thing, which is that some sort of diagram to do with the sauce?
The sauce.
Yes. I had tomato sauce with my dinner today. wonder what
sauce be with you.
It wasn't as good as mine, Kirby, to be fair. Alan T. Butcher says, the Master gave them the net. he took it off a sea devil's back. Half-hearted laugh there, Gobi. Anyway, so these little flame things, it reminds me a little bit of sacred flame, sacred fire situation. Keeps on dying. That's indicating the death of the keeper, which eventually the keeper does die. And they're just trying to time it well. There's a little bit of fighting on this peaceful planet, like you say, in the yard where the TARDIS is. And yes. And Proctor Neiman gets sort of knocked out. And
why are they so afraid of a thunderstorm?
I don't know. Well, it's sort of superstitious, isn't it? Have you not seen?
Yeah, I get the feeling they're afraid of the thunderstorm as much as all the wind and the storm means that the keeper is dying. So I think they're more reacting to that.
It reminds me a little bit of episode 1 of series 2 of Stranger Things, when the whole crux of that first episode is this huge storm that's brewing up. It's in the Upside Down, so I don't know what they're scared of. Mind you, I haven't seen the rest of the series yet.
I haven't seen Stranger Things.
So. Oh dear.
Well, I have not either.
Well, there you go. You're missing out.
Well, you haven't seen, what was it that we were encouraging you to see for years that you still haven't seen?
Oh, what, Prisoner?
Possibly The Prisoner.
No, not The Prisoner. Something else.
Oh, I know. It was Sherlock. Funny, I started yawning when you talked about Sherlock. Anyway, so right in the a big storm brews up. That's because the keeper's dying, and Cassia dives into the chair, and she's really pleased with herself. And then the Melker's very pleased with himself, because as soon as the Doctor and Tremus sort of come in a little bit too late, Cassia starts moaning a little bit. Maybe she's got a bit of indigestion, I don't know. She's like, and then she sort of does a strange sort of dematerialization, and she's replaced by a TARDIS swirling noise, and the Melker appears sat comfortably in the keeper's seat. And of course there's a point
just
in which
before that we saw the Master in full too.
I forgot to mention, because you talked over it, there was a little shot of his hand, just a hint.
Oh,
earlier on
that, we saw his
no, I mean earlier on in the episode. Right, Robert, I think, is implying I've got to try again.
He just says waiting for it all to load.
I thought I was getting excited from that.
Is this what you guys used to have to put up with me?
What were your dodgy computers? I can't remember.
Yes.
I
don't know if
it took this long, but yeah, this many messages and and all that you used to do.
So the Melker's really, really pleased with himself now, because he's in the driving seat, literally. but he's toying with the Doctor. Adric, meanwhile, takes Nyssa into the TARDIS. Woohoo! But again, on top of the TARDIS console, there's a couple of big books, which was quite amusing itself. This is where he's sort of really showing off to Nyssa. He sort of knows, like, he knows how to use the TARDIS, and
he's switching a few. Does she say anything about it's bigger on the inside?
No, that's what Adric said, something about it being dimensionally transcendental, and she said, "What does that mean?" He said, "It's bigger on the inside." Essentially, not those exact words, but sort of paraphrasing.
She just didn't seem all that impressed.
No, she didn't. But there you go.
She's a smart girl.
I've met Sarah Sutton; she's lovely. Right, so Proctor Neiman is absolutely—he's beside himself, because he's been given a task by the Melker. And he's got one of those little necklace things as well now. So the Doctor and Tremus are plotting, and then the Melker appears in the keeper's seat. But when he appears, it's with the TARDIS noise, so it implies that he's actually materialised the TARDIS and the seat there. But during he's trying to get this scroll off the Doctor and Tremus.
Hello.
I think he believes that this...
Hello.
Ah, that sounds a bit like Robert.
You can hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Yeah.
Wow.
Could hear you earlier on, Robert, when you were tapping your keyboard.
Sorry, you did? Oh, yeah.
What's what?
About 2 episodes ago.
Anyway, right then, Robert. So, ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce Mr. Robert Shearman. I'm sorry. Robert Haynes, I beg your pardon.
Hello, everybody.
Oh, this is the point. I believe
you. From the land of down under. Huh?
Yeah, you're supposed to have some sort of quote, are you not, Robert?
Oh, hold on.
Slick.
I'm in the dark here because of...
Is it dark?
No, the housing authority hasn't fixed our light in the, the room that I... I suppose there's a bit of... Oh, no. Oh, damn. Oh, if I knew everything that was going to happen, where would the fun be?
Welcome back to the show, Robert. This is Robert Haynes, everyone. Right then, yeah, so Robert... Beg your pardon, Kirby?
Master, I was just noticing when Tremos and the Doctor are looking at the plans for the source that they're holding down the edges with two artificial eggplants. Or albergines, I'm sorry.
Oh, didn't notice that. Didn't really care. Laurie Nix says, hello, Robert.
I did.
No, Laurie Nix.
Justin, we grow eggplants, that's why.
But Robert.
Justin, yes.
Laurie Nix says, hello, Robert.
Who?
Laurie Nix. She said, hello, Robert.
Something anyway. That Adam didn't do in the days when you were on, Robert, was that he broadcast this live on Facebook. So people who are watching it on Facebook type in comments.
Yeah. I have seen that, but I'm just wondering what's going on because it's 3 in the morning and I'm...
Don't give me that 3 in the morning excuse. It's blooming, it's 5 past 8 in the evening here. No, right then.
Four past 3. But Robert, you mean in Australia it's an eggplant, not an albergine like it is in England?
No, eggplant, yeah.
Albergine? Cool. What's an albergine? Do you mean aubergine?
Aubergine,
okay,
yes.
For goodness sake. Right then, can we get back to the episode? Right then, so...
Well, that doesn't know how it's pronounced. It's not, we don't call them that.
I don't care. Anyway, let's move back to the episode. Proctor Neiman. Oh yeah, so there's a point in which they're going to the Melkers after the scroll, which I believe has details on how to destroy the source. Because obviously, without the source, no power for the keeper.
Tomato or barbecue?
No, we've already had that joke. You missed it about half an hour ago.
Okay. Sorry.
Anyway, right. So the Doctor switches scrolls, and the Melker destroys the switched scroll, and then we have this ridiculous scene where the Doctor gets all the villains, guards, into a little huddle, and then knocks all their heads together, hard enough to knock them out. Hey.
Heads are better than one.
Yeah, it's all right. It's a good gag on the program, but it's impractical to think that it would knock all three of them out. But there you go.
Did you notice something about the Proctors?
No.
They all seem to have bald patches.
Maybe. Yeah, I noticed that.
No, I didn't.
Very weird.
Sure that. That's actually a good point.
I ought to be a Proctor.
No, they. Yeah. Oh yeah, I noticed that the one who was in the Aztec, she had a bald patch, didn't she? But she wasn't a Proctor. She was a console. Maybe she used to be a Proctor. So, Nyssa and Adric, meanwhile, make a big, sort of ball-shaped, globey, see-through thingy.
That looks like the
thing.
They
gave away in Shop Shop.
Did they?
Yeah.
I wonder who owns that now.
Yeah, I wonder what happened to it as well.
Yeah, but they made it really quickly.
It reminds me of that ball in the one Star Trek episode that Sargon was in that kept switching bodies with Kirk.
No. Okay. Anyway, so Adric finds a way of wiring it into the TARDIS console, and the Doctor and Tremus go off and do some more what's the word for it?
Looting?
No, plotting. So they get into the sort of console area where...
Expositioning.
Yeah, they call the Keeper, i.e. the Melker, and then they sort of sabotage things, and then a great big storm brews up. I'm not moving forward a little bit here, and then of course, but before that, the Melker calls in Proctor Neiman and gets, because he's taken over the Doctor and Tremus's minds now, and gets Tremus to kill Proctor Neiman and nearly kill himself, but he changed his mind because he's just toying with them
to sort of whip the gun away.
Yeah. And then he calls the Doctor into the chamber and then into his TARDIS, and he has the big reveal that he's in fact the Master.
It's all evilly. Yes.
Yeah. Evil. And the funny thing is he's got teeth painted.
Evil!
Yes, we've had that, but he's got teeth painted onto his lips.
I know, it's ridiculous.
It's not as good as the Master makeup that was in Deadly Assassin.
Master?
Yeah, the Master, because, I just said that.
Yeah, that's because the mask that they made for that story had deteriorated, So they couldn't
reuse it so many years ago.
Well, they should have made a new one then.
And also it allowed him to be a little more, produce more emotion and stuff. I mean, you could see his eyes.
The eyes
There wasn't it. For bear in mind, he only actually appeared in half an episode like this. It wasn't really worth it, was it? Laurie next did a winky.
Isn't he doing the Master in All Sorts of Big Finish now?
Yes, he is.
Jeffrey Beavers.
Indeed.
Yes.
Laurie Nix says, this is the point in the podcast where we don't talk about this emoji, and I think it's it's an aubergine for 5 minutes. And then Laurie Nix does a winky face, and then there were a few Star Trek like props in this one. Now, so moving on.
Right,
so there's a point in which the Master has the Doctor sort of paralysed in the TARDIS. Our Doctor's able to speak, but he pervs around the TARDIS.
Yeah.
It's really
yeah,
quite, it's quite
he
creepy.
He touches his hair.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. So Jeffrey Beavers, who was he married to? It was Liz Shaw's...
Caroline John.
Caroline John, that's it. Anyways, and then there's a big flame inside the Master's TARDIS, and the winds blow, and the Doctor gets Adric to crawl along the floor. Good crawling along the windy floor acting by Matthew Waterhouse, and he entered in the numbers on the thing but didn't quite get the fourth one in. He just entered enough numbers so as the door could open, the Doctor just flicked the last switch, and then there's obviously the
337
the Melker's grip on the keeper ship. And one of the remaining consoles runs in and becomes the keeper of Trakan.
The one who looks like Luvik.
Yeah, and there's a point in which it almost that Threemus and the Doctor almost high five each other as they celebrate. The Doctor runs out. The unfortunate time rotor is really not going up very up and down. So the Doctor decides that they need to do a little bit of work on the TARDIS. I wonder what that's leading up to.
Yeah, I wonder what that's going to do.
So, they all celebrate. Then Nyssa says goodbye to her daddy. I'll come out and see you in a minute, Nyssa. Just got something to do in here. I've got this found this grandfather clock, which seems to be out of place, so I'll just touch
it. He's trying to adjust the time. It's the wrong time.
And then there's a
midnight.
And then the funny thing is, the Master's sort of body merges with Tremus's to create the Master, but the clothes are created by this mergence as well, which is quite funny.
Regenerated as well.
Yeah, different hair, different clothes.
Does that to the Doctor though?
Does it with earlier Doctors, doesn't it? Anyway, so Keeper of Trakan, right then. I love Keeper of Trakan. I think it's a really good story. Very funny in areas maybe that it's not supposed to be. I think at the time
funny.
I watched it. Beg your pardon?
Was funny.
Well, you missed all those bits. We were talking about it, and mainly to do with I don't know really. The little gags they put. There was lots of little gags put into it. The knocking of heads together and stuff like that. Excuse me.
In itself, it's not a funny story. But
no, there's funny bits within it. I do like the story. It's quite not unique. It's different. And I like that. It's not too much too sciencey, although there's a lot of science involved in this series and the next one because of Mr. Bidmead. But this story is really, really good. It's difficult to say that it's probably the best one of this season for me. I know a lot of people like State of Decay, but I think this is the best one of the season because when I watched it when it first went out, I didn't know that I didn't even remember the Master. I had no inkling of who the Master was, so it was all quite a big reveal for me that when Tremus sort of became the Master, I thought, oh, who's this? I then obviously was told by somebody who the Master was, and maybe there was a discussion of it on Nationwide that night. I don't know, but and of course it was even more exciting.
No,
well, that's silly.
For our DVD, so
okay, on the corner of that man. Thanks for that, Robert. Because obviously subsequent episodes, it was even more exciting when no spoilers, but the Master crops up in the next story, in the next few stories, in fact. played by Anthony Ainley, and Nyssa reappearing was a bit of a surprise as well. You know. But it's a really, really good story. I think it's only one minor thing where obviously you said, Kirby, that one episode was running short and they had to do a 2-minute, you know, recap.
Surprise, yeah.
But
longer than that.
Yeah, but people are going to disagree with me, but I think it's a cracking story. I really do. Therefore, as you've just arrived, Robert, what did you think of The Keeper of Traken?
I love it as well.
Okay, then. Now, so what did you think of it then? I'm only joking, carry on.
A really good story, and I think they sort of overcome the limitations of the studio. And just fabulous design work, from the clothes to the sets. Except for I did think a bit weird that why do the dungeons, they try to portray the dungeons as being unkempt by, you know, strewing a bit of hay around. I don't know. But it was very theatrical, I found, as well. Instead of,
We had proper thespians in it, didn't we?
Oh, yes. And like Kirby, I didn't know John Woodnut was really in either until I think it was mentioned on the making of. So that was nice, but I mean, he was only in it for, what, 2 episodes?
Yeah, which was a shame.
Yes, I agree, because he's such a good actor.
Yes.
What else did I write down? Oh, I like the bit where the Doctor's talking to Adric in the TARDIS. He says, I suppose it's a bit above your head, and he's looking up at the ceiling of the TARDIS. I thought that was a bit funny. So yeah, that's one of the funny bits that you're...
Yeah, so there are funny bits. Thank you, Robert, for eventually agreeing with me.
And I was just thinking, the Melkor, when he's walking around, is it quite lucky that the doors don't have handles? Because those clubs on the end of his hands aren't very mobile.
No.
That was just something. But yeah, I absolutely loved it. One thing that I over here, they didn't show the deadly assassin for ages, so I sort of didn't get the reference with this old decrepit master, because the last time I knew it, he was Roger Delgado.
Yeah.
So that was like a total surprise to me, and I think, what the hell happened? Why is he like this? And just thinking, why, if he's in such a decrepit state, why do you want to wear decrepit sort of looking clothes as well? I found that a bit silly. But yeah, I loved it. I think Jeffrey Beaver's you mentioned, yeah, about being in Big Finish, and he does such a fabulous job there as well, so glad he continues on doing it.
Indeed, thank you for that, Robert. Now, Kirby, did you say you hadn't seen this before?
I had not seen this before this past week.
That's what? Interesting.
I had never, ever seen this one.
Okay.
And there. I love this one.
Oh, well, I was going to find out if Mary'd seen it before. Have you seen it before, Mary?
Yes, I have.
Okay.
Several years ago. Yeah, okay. I did see it.
Okay, well, let's listen to Kirby then. Oh, God, I cannot believe I've actually said that sentence out loud. Let's listen to Kirby. Oh, right, I'm stuck with it now, aren't we?
It's recorded now.
Obviously, I had seen the scene where the decrepit master turns into Anthony Anley before, because you see that all the time. But I knew nothing else about the story. I didn't know that until I think we were talking about Shada the most recent time, that Dennis Carey was even in it.
Yeah.
And John Wood.
Unrecognizable.
Yeah. And I was very impressed. This story was good. It moved along all the intrigue and everything. It did have some funny bits in it. Like I said, it's a little silly that this peaceful society has basically policemen and prisons.
And guns.
And see, I went into it, of course, knowing that Tremas was an anagram for master. But I was impressed, because this is the first time I've really seen Anthony Ainley in a non-master role. I mean, he's not
master
where he is.
Yeah.
And he's very, very good.
Great.
It was fantastic to see him doing something not the master. And it's making me look forward to his master stuff. Because he was the first master I ever saw. I didn't see Delgado until way more recently. Delgado's a better master. But
well, you might disagree with that if you watch all of Andy's master stories in succession.
Yeah. Excuse me?
You might change your mind about that when you've watched all of Antony Ailey's master story. Yeah, there's a good few years of them.
We'll see.
I'm not saying you are going to change your mind.
Unless one of the other stories, I think there's like six stories I still have not ever seen, happens to be a master story. Wow. I think I've seen all of Antony Ailey's. So this would have been the last one. I'll have to look at my list of what I still haven't seen.
Well, he's the master for the next, well, this Doctor and then the next three, so it's...
I know.
I can't believe you've still got stories unseen. What? What's going on with you, Kirby?
It happened. One of the reasons I'm so keen on doing what we're doing now is to have a chance to see them all. And to talk with other people who also have seen them. I really like this one. I was impressed by it. Not much more to say.
Thank you for that, Kirby. So go on, Mary.
Well, last week when you were asking our opinions of the coming story, which was this one, The Keeper of Draken, and I said then that I had seen it. It's been several years just before we started the journey, when I was kind of skip-jumping around and just, you know, seeing various episodes of various Doctors just to familiarize myself with the classic Doctor Who. And at the time, and I remember saying that, yeah, I'm kind of meh about this story. Well, now I know why I felt that way, because so much of appreciating this story depends on knowing what came before it. And so when I saw it, I too didn't know where this burned up, you know, scrubby looking character came from. I just thought he was just an evil person. And I didn't get, you know, that he's what did the transformation into the modern master. So all of that was lost on me. And at the time, I also thought that it was a very, to echo what Robert said, he said it's very theatrical. Well, yeah, that's what struck me, is it seemed very stagey, that people were processing around, you know, and stating lines like they were in a, you know, a Shakespeare play or something. Exactly. Yeah, and so for me, this whole thing just really dragged. Now, seeing it in context of what all came before, one comment I want to make is this whole season seems very lush, very, you know, lots of brocades and velvets. Excuse me. A lot of scenery that is very romantic and gothic and all that. So this is a very, very lush season altogether. It would have been nice to see something, you know, that varied from that. But no, you know, we're continuing the theme here.
Warrior's Gate.
I'm sorry, what did you
say? Warrior's Gate. That wasn't a very lush kind of thing, was it?
No, I guess not. But anyway, seeing this in context now, so much more of it makes sense to me. I still think that it's very stagey. I still think that these stage actors, at least they come across as stage actors, are still doing their processing around and saying their lines as if each one, you know, is going to be the line of the scene. So, and because of some of that replaying of previous scenes, you know, which we've talked about before, it did have kind of a overall draggy feel. So that keeps it from being one of my favorites. But I did like it overall. I liked the story, and I liked a lot that went on. And I had to get a kick out of Nyssa and Adric making their little invention there to stop, to blow up the source, and saying, ooh, I hope we don't have to use this. And then in the very next scene, you know, they're off using it. Yeah. Just like we said, you know, with this peaceful society, how did, in a matter of seconds, did the Fosters come up with all their guns and that? So there's a little bit of incongruity in there. And this is another case where I read that the writer, that rewrites were going on all the way through this, but because they were able to hold on to the writer, they were able to maintain the continuity, unlike the last story. But then he did have to leave while they were working on episode 4.
He went to Greece.
Yeah, he went to Greece, yeah. But then, very unusual, he did end up saying that he was pleased with how it turned out. So, you know, usually writers don't like it when others take over, but he was pleased. So it's still, you know, I liked it, but it's still not among my, you know, favorite episodes.
Okay. Thank you, Mary. I suppose we could move on to feedback now. Before we...
Hold on, can I just say one more thing?
No, I suppose so.
I forgot to mention.
Yes.
I was just saying, who had the bigger perm in the story? Do you think it was Nyssa or the Doctor?
Nyssa. No, it was the bigger perm. It was definitely Cassia.
Yeah, Cassia, I think, wins out.
Yeah, they're all trying to rival each other, weren't they?
So, feedback. We have Kirby requested some. We actually got quite a bit of feedback through that particular request.
Well, some of it is me going on about the continuity announcer in Chicago.
Yes.
Okay, well, anyway, Jeff Waddle says, I had to go to Cubs when this was aired, and as we didn't have a video back then, all I could do was record it on a cassette up at the TV. I didn't know what the hell was going on because the recording was full of doors creaking, dishes being washed, and when the melter came on, someone switched over to ITV. what else?
By the way, Master, what does he mean he had to go to Cubs?
That's
Scouts.
Scouts, yes, as in Baden Powell stuff, you know.
Boy Scouts,
yeah. Anity Butcher said the Trakan Union broke up eventually soon after the Metala Orion exit debacle.
you missed another Anity Butcher response.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't think it was relevant. Oh, go on then. I can see how that would not be the best medium to extract full value from the story. He's talking about Jeff Waddle's comment. Laurie Nick says, I love this announcer too much. Chaos is imminent. Much like our podcast.
She's referring to the little video I put out there from 1983, I believe, of the Chicago, 1984 Chicago continuity announcer who made a very silly joke, which someone referred to as possibly a dad joke.
Keep on trucking.
Some sort of advert. What's this got to do with it?
On the phone on that last Sunday night. I know it's the Doctor fans who want to take us over the edge.
Yeah.
It's okay. Call in a subscription tonight and call in another one.
No, that's
Sunday.
Not it.
Okay, you could have told me that before, 5 minutes less into it.
No, at the top of the initial video.
Well, that is the initial video, you silly man. That was
the
first one.
No, at that where I'm saying recording will start at 7:30.
Oh, you didn't tell me that either, did you? The initial
it's
one.
Recorded.
Where does it say this? Recording will start at 7:30. Blah 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 blah. Attached video. Oh, this one here. Hang on. Here we go.
In the harmonious world of truck. This one here, he says. See.
Right. Here we go.
In the harmonious world of truck, any visiting evil creature is literally turned to stone, which certainly solves the problem of law and order. But chaos is imminent. The Doctor's help is needed. Let us fervently hope he will inspire the inhabitants to keep on trucking.
Boo! Boo! It's just the sort of joke you'd like and probably invent, Kirby, to be fair.
Marty Robinson was with Channel 11 in Chicago for years and years and years, and he was so enthusiastic about Doctor Who. He made sure that they got the new stories in as soon as they were available, and was right on top of all of the details about what was going on. And the thing you started to play, don't bother playing it, but during a pledge break, he even had some controversial news about J&T.
Good for him.
At the time, J&T was going to American conventions and taking video recordings of extra stuff and showing them without permission.
Naughty, naughty JNT. Okay, right, you can do the Laurie Nix comment, because that's quite a long one. I'm going to sit back and just psych myself up for the next one.
Maybe Mary should, because...
Well, Mary's not on that page.
Yes, I am.
Oh, I'll lean back then. Listen to Mary's dulcet tones.
This is from Laurie Nix. Regarding this serial, I enjoyed it the first time I watched and still think it is a fascinating mix of fairy tale and sci-fi. Post-Brahmana and E-Space seems like a shot in the arm, the hopeful beginnings, new characters, and story arcs. Still can't quite figure out at this stage whether I like or hate Edric. That will change soon. But that companion and the doctor are meshing nicely. As for Trocken, the Keeper, the Council, and the fabulous Nyssa, all are fascinating to watch. Or maybe it's just that I have a thing for velvet and leg of mutton sleeves. Melker is wonderfully menacing when he's Melker. The master reveal is great in theory, just once you get inside old Stoneface, it's a bit weak. The actor chosen to play the decrepit master is blah. I did really enjoy Ainley in the beginning of his run. As I said, at the time seemed to be a hopeful restart continuation of the Fourth Doctor's adventuring. Thankfully, we haven't gotten to the beige period quite yet. beige period.
You don't like Jeffrey Beavers?
No, not much.
Oh, okay.
Well, he only did it for one episode.
What about on audio? What about on audio?
Yeah, on audio.
Oh, on audio. Well, he's better on audio.
Okay.
Yeah.
Joshua Dybul says, enjoyed this story, aged 11. Got very upset about poor Nyssa's dad at the end. He seemed such a lovely old chap. Funny how the master got a new body from Tremus, but simultaneously also gained a new outfit and haircut too. That's what I said. I had the pleasure of meeting the Melker in person at the Doctor Who Experience in 2011. Here's my photo. There's a picture on there. If you join the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, you'll see it. He was much smaller than I imagined and had very little to say, as usual. As a lad, I was chuffed that the Doctor had just a male travelling companion for the first time in my lifetime, but shortly to be spoilt by an influx of yet more girls. Came as a disappointment later in life to find out that Baker and Waterhouse didn't get on, though. Well, we loved Adric.
Hey, I'm just wondering something.
I'm just wondering
when this started, this story of Keeper of Trocken, how soon did each of you, on looking at Tremus, realize that that was Anthony Ainslie?
Well, obviously didn't know it when it actually went out, because it wasn't in the story arc.
He wasn't the master.
I know, but I'm talking now, you know, looking at it. I recognized him right away.
I knew
straight away. Obviously, once I watched The Keeper of Trocken, and you know he becomes his body becomes the master's, and obviously every time you watch it, you know that's Anthony Ainley.
Yeah,
master.
Okay, well, yes.
Years ago, when I did watch it, you know, and I didn't know anything, you know, in the continuity or all that, and I hadn't seen very much of Anthony Ainslie yet. I didn't know who it was, but when I watched it this time, right away, I'm like, wait a minute, there's Anthony Ainslie.
Yeah,
it's
Ainslie.
I didn't know ahead of time.
Beg your pardon?
Master?
God, everybody's talking. Yes, Kirby.
As Joshua pointed out, between this story, just give me a little more context, between this story, if you do not count Nyssa as a companion, because she really isn't in this story, it is just the Doctor and Adric.
Yes.
There will never be another single companion, single male companion, and the Doctor story until Doctor Mysterio.
Okay.
Can I also mention something?
Yes.
Because talking about Big Finish, Big Finish are actually doing some audios with just Tom and Hedrick, can't they?
Well, that's nice for Matthew.
Coming out, I don't.
But then it doesn't fit in, doesn't really fit in, or does it fit into the story arc?
Yeah, that's why I was wondering, because they seem to be coming up off the back of Warrior's Gate saying, oh, we're on our way to Gallifrey now.
Maybe it does then, yeah. Right, the next one is Lillian Robbins says, I love this one, and watching it again wants me to cosplay as Nyssa. I'd love to see that, Robin. Oh, Lillian, sorry. Robin? Why did I get a name mixed up? Oh, sorry, Lillian. Solly, I can't speak all of a sudden. Hang on. I'll use my elder wand to clear my mouth out. Right, I'll start again. Lillian Robbins says, I love this one. That didn't work, did it? And watching it again wants me to cosplay as Nyssa. I think I'm getting repetitive saying I've loved the costumes this entire season.
Ah, they've been wonderful.
Sorry, I can't watch the live feed this week. It's not good enough, Lillian. I thought you were. And then we've got some stuff that's come through. So if I do this... Oh, no, not yet. No. Sorry. Stuff, yeah. So if I do this, this is all stuff I have to do off stage...
Podcast, is Ian Kirk.
Hello, Ian.
I've just got two-factor authentication on my credit card account with voice recognition password, so I must never say the word Megopolis on the podcast. The Keeper of Traken by Johnny Byrne. We could panic, of course, but where would that get us? An advanced civilization looks like the Middle Ages. Cassia seems to have Bonnie Langford's hair. Malka seems to have the voice of Marvin, the paranoid android. It is nice to see Anthony Ainley in a different role.
Yeah, Kirby said that.
We see an old trick of Doctor Who. When they want to put out a story, someone builds a complicated device quite slowly. Walking down corridors as well, of course. Repeatedly being captured and put in a cell. The Doctor is about to have three companions, and two of them are not Earthlings. So we can't really complain about their acting.
Indeed.
That does not account for the way Tegan goes on, though. Oh, I said my voice password. So, as long as I never say it again. Bye for now.
Thank you, Ian.
Thank you, Ian.
And on the topic of doctors traveling with male companions, Big Finish also put out a box set of stories that are the fifth Doctor and who's the young guy that was
Adric.
With them? No, not Adric. The one from the boys' school.
Turlo.
Yeah, the fifth Doctor and Turlo. There's a set of those, just those two together.
Mm-hmm.
Which ones were those? I can't remember. I think I've listened to them.
It was last year. I'd have to look it up.
Anyway, Alan T. Butcher has sent through his usual manuscript. So I think after Kirby did it last week, it's only fair to send it over to the orator of the year here at the 28 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast. It's Mary Blitz Lang.
Hold on here. I'm trying to put it in a form I can read it instead of that little tiny way that it comes in.
That's what she said.
I couldn't do that last week when I was trying to do it.
Oh my gosh, this goes on for like 100 years. Well, everybody sit
back. That's why you've got it.
Yeah. Are you sitting comfortably? Then we'll begin.
Comfortable, it's going to go on. Okay, keep on Tolkien or the hugger mugger Zygon invasion of Traken. Dear 20 Megabyters, the Keeper of Traken is, of course, a closely studied and now timely cautionary tale about political complacency in the face of a malignant figure and the inherent danger presented by the instability of political transition. Clearly, the Melker is a Nigel Farage figure, not only tolerated but appeased and tended to by the instructions of the old Keeper, who is very much a mirror of David Cameron. Cassia ends up becoming Keeper after the expected heir is betrayed and taken out of the running, and everyone else rules themselves out, much as happened with Theresa May becoming Prime Minister. Then, after much wailing and unpleasantness, the Master seizes the powers of the Keepership unelected, illegitimate, and prepared to break all the rules whilst wearing the guise of the milker, just as Boris Johnson did in the role of Prime Minister, with a pledge to deliver a purist Farage European policy. Oh, in the end, however, the situation comes down to a Danny Baker-style sausage sandwich quiz, deciding between red sauce, brown sauce, or no sauce at all. So whilst the doctor tries to change the color of the sauce, and Adric and Nyssa go for no sauce at all, it appears the master comes to a sticky end. Then the desirable end is achieved that Luvik, whose public service was for many years substantial but limited in personal ambition, perhaps all the more virtuous for that, is called upon to step up to the leadership. The master survives, of course, by metamorphosis once again akin to Alexander Boris de Feifel Johnson. It should be noted that whilst some would suggest that it is cruel to force someone to take on a lifelong commitment to act as the organizing focus for government, continuing into your extreme old age, it must be said at least Queen Elizabeth II gets a nice seat, and so does the keeper. We also learn that Gallifreyan arch-criminal
Selyavin
continued to evade the authorities, hiding out as the most prominent figure in the universally famous Union of Trakhan. He seems to have got together with the doctor's jilted South American wife,
Kamika,
and the Zygon known as Broton, to draw the doctor into trouble with the master. All in all, The Keeper of Trakhan is one of the great stories of Doctor Who.
Yes.
It is a beautifully well-built, studio-based world to a standard possibly not seen since Peladon. It's probably the moment my transition from keen viewer to fan was completed. I had no idea it had introduced me slightly to some elements of J.R.R. Tolkien's Silmarillion, but I always felt fascinated by the notion of the milker. All the consoles are well-defined roles and complete individuals, and well-portrayed. They make up a wonderfully dithery and worrisome committee. Adric shows promise here as a very capable person, but whilst Nyssa also proves fairly resourceful too, she does fall in one major respect as a companion in that she doesn't leave with the doctor in the TARDIS. This story is perhaps two episodes too short, as there was plenty of scope in covering the dithering of a tin pot committee. Next up, Doctor Who and Beige Bet's arrival, or the prepared for moment at the end. Those are my thoughts, Alan T. Butcher.
Brilliant. One of his best, I think we can all say there.
Yeah, that's a really nice piece he wrote there.
And, of course, not at all biased towards his beloved Labour Party.
Sympathies.
Did you guys remember also that John Woodnut was a draconian as well?
Oh, yes. No, I'd forgotten about that. Well done, Robert. Oh, I missed my bell. Hang on. There we go. Not really worth anything today, but it's certainly...
Something else.
Yes.
Something I noticed when I'm watching the story. You know when the Malka first appears on the throne? I had to go to the toilet. But,
God.
There was the sound of the TARDIS, wasn't there?
Yes.
You know, like a sudden materializing. Why didn't the doctor click then?
Yeah, I thought that actually. Like, well done.
Yeah.
I did actually consider that.
I'm the master kind of thing, you know.
Yeah,
slow.
He would have thought he would have noticed the sound of a TARDIS. Mind you, he's usually inside the TARDIS at the time.
The doctor would come in, but he didn't even do that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Only a small thing.
Now,
yes.
I did not. I don't recall even. I didn't listen to all of the commentary or anything, and they didn't mention this in. That I remember the making of. It was only when we started talking that you guys pointed out that Margot Vandenberg was in the Aztecs.
I said that earlier on in this episode.
I mentioned it in the commentary.
Well, it's not that long since we watched the Aztecs.
In the commentary. See, I didn't have a chance to listen to the commentary.
They didn't name the story, though.
No, but it's not that long since we watched the Aztecs. Only a couple of years. So that's her face is clearly a recognizable face from previous Doctor.
I think it's cool. It's just, I just didn't notice it.
It's like, you know, you see the faces like John Woodnut and stuff like that as faces, obviously, because we watch them all together in succession that we pick up on recognizable faces.
It's been 4.5 years since we discussed this.
And Toby Haydock led me to believe that John Abernary was in Doctor Who a lot as well, but he's not in it as much as, you know, say, for instance, the chap used to live on the island, you know, who was in umpteen stories. Can't remember his name now. Played Mr. Bronson in Grange Hill.
Sheard.
That's it, Michael Sheard, yeah. He was in it a lot. And he's still got more episodes to appear in yet. I won't tell you when, but he will be in a future episode of Doctor Who. And of course, Packard, he was in a few as well, wasn't he? The actor that played Packard.
Yes. We started the journey the beginning of 2015, so...
Yeah. Anyway, I don't want to forget this. I want to say it now. Alan T. Butcher said about the obviously when he saw this story, Keeper of Traken, it was the moment he went, his transition went from keen viewer into a fan. So that's just quite interesting to me, because the next story is the story that turned me from keen viewer into fan. So isn't that weird?
Very first story I ever saw turned me from fan immediately into fan. So.
Oh, wow. There you go.
What was that one? Hand of Fear, wasn't it?
Hand of Fear.
Well remembered. Well done, Robert.
What the heck is going on? That was Ark in Space.
All right then, so it's time to move on to...
And it gave you a fear of bubble wrap forever.
Yeah. It just made me think, you know, whoever this popular Doctor Who is, he's a clown.
Well, that's happened a few times. Anyway, so, new. I'm sorry, not news. It's whowon.co.uk. Christmas is coming. Yeah, so it's now time to think of presents for people. And our friends at whowon.co.uk have some various things on offer. Lots and lots of Target books in their original sort of covers and stuff like that, because they are book specialists. But also, Big Finish CDs, including Harry Houdini's War, Hope, Legacy of Time, and Tartarus. And
Tartarus.
Be quiet. And we have Resolution Series 11 box set, Enemy of the World Special Edition, Twice Upon a Time. And what else we've got? Oh, Eighth Doctor, Further Adventures of Lucy Miller 1. That's a mouthful for a title, isn't it? And yeah, all sorts of stuff like that. Plus gifts and stuff like that.
And let me say, and I'm sure they're carrying it, though it isn't as new as these that you're looking at, there is an audio put out by Big Finish that is a drama, not a Doctor Who song thing, that is Transference, starring, Alex Kingston, thank you. It is 8 hours of a gripping drama.
Oh, yes.
Oh, my gosh, it is so wonderfully done.
Are they called drama originals or something?
Yeah, I think they just call it Big Finish originals. But I mean, she is excellent, as is everybody in it. And I'm telling you, it is 8 hours well spent. And I'm sure you can get it from whowon.co.uk.
Well plugged, Mary. Anyway, Lavazzi. I'm not going to talk about Lavazzi's usual products that are available at lavazzi.co.uk. Because obviously they they've got women's gloves, Pandorica Opens gloves, they're fairly new. The Christmas hats might be quite useful. The Christmas jumper, I mean, mine didn't actually fit me. It was supposed to be 2XL, but it was very, very tight on me. But
who's white?
No, that's not the reason why it was tight on me, thank you, Robert. And some other TARDIS scarves and stuff like that. Of course, the Fourth Doctor scarf. But what's come out, and I did post it on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, obviously also mentioning a previous product, which is fab. What was that previous product? I can't remember. That came out a few just before we did the con. Oh, it was really good. It was the bag, wasn't it? It was the laptop bag, the TARDIS laptop bag, which is cool in itself. But I posted today that the 13th Doctor scarf is now available.
Yes, it was.
It's so cool if you're a lady, or if you're a bloke for that matter, or if you don't mind what way you are, get the 13th Doctor's scarf at Lavazzi. I don't know if it's available yet, but just, you know, go to lavazzi.co.uk and just wait until it becomes available, if it's not already available. So there we go. That's some great stuff. They're bringing out lots and lots of good stuff at Lavazzi. Our friends at Lavazzi! And they are our friends. And I just tapped the wrong thing in. Right, here we go. Right. So, Doctor Who News. Mission to the Unknown Reconstruction. Now, I'm going to leave this with Kirby because I don't know what the blimmin' heck it's all about. Apart from a redoing of Mission to the... Oh, excuse me. Mission to the Unknown, which was a lead into the Dalek story, which we reviewed quite a long time ago. So, go on then, Kirby. You can say... There's a trailer. Shall I play the trailer for your benefit?
I don't think we should play the trailer. Just have people go out and watch
it. I haven't watched it, so go on then. I'm not bothered. Carry on.
Well, essentially, what is the University of Central, and I'm going to mispronounce this, so don't... Lancashire?
I wasn't mispronounced.
Who was it in the university decided to remount the whole thing, a team of students, graduates, and staff have redone the story so we can actually see it, and they brought together a dedicated group of students from a wide range of disciplines, including film and television, acting, fashion, music, design, and dance, to recreate the episode from the original script as authentically as possible, carefully researching and reproducing as faithfully as possible the original 1960s production techniques to recreate the classic look of the series. And then when he found out about it, Nick Briggs is now going to provide the Dalek voices.
Oh, good.
And several other people also visited the set, Peter Purvis and Edward D'Souza, who played Mark Corey, the main character in it, the original episode. They visited the set. I haven't seen any pictures of that yet. So this is going to be shown 54 years after it was first screened in the UK. And it will be immediately followed by a making-of documentary.
So Wednesday night, is it? 5:30,
I'm trying to find the exact date.
I know it's something like...
So who can get the Doctor Who channel?
Doctor Who channel, or Doctor Who channel?
On YouTube.
That's just the regular YouTube.
Okay. Wow, there you go.
Yeah, that's Wednesday. It'll be Wednesday night. Since it's only half an hour, we should discuss it next week.
I don't know if I've got time to watch it, but you could discuss it if you so wish. I'm not going to lose
an
any.
Hour.
I'm not going to lose anything out of my life by missing it. To be fair, so yeah, that's fine. Yes. Right then.
You don't think you'll have a chance to watch it?
I'll probably forget. To be fair, Kirby, I don't know if I've mentioned this before. I'm quite busy.
Okay, I have a suggestion.
Oh, God, here we go.
If
yes.
If you get a chance to watch it, then we will take time to discuss it.
I don't mind you discussing it whether I watch it or not. I essentially remember the idea of the story. So I'm sure that they'll be absolutely thrilled that somebody's going to be talking about it. But it might be a good idea.
They advertise it in full color, but it's only going to be in black and white.
The trailer's in black and white.
Okay.
To
get it authentic as possible, they've got the same way.
It's almost like a reconstruction, isn't it?
It's
a full reconstruction.
Okay, maybe I will watch it. Just try and remind me, Kirby. If it's on, I don't have to stream it at the time it goes out, I might be able to squeeze it into my busy schedule. Well, don't forget to send us a link then. Hello, anybody there?
I'm certainly not going to see it at 5:50 p.m. British time on the.
I'm just saying, don't forget to send me a link. I just forgot to mention that behind me, over my right shoulder, is the Garm, who's taken position by the front door, looking exceptionally cute, and yes, he can be seen in live action here on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast video link, which you can see on the 20 megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, which you can join. Pardon?
Where's the gun?
Is that there, right by the door? You not see on the video?
Ah, dogs.
Yeah, I see the dogs.
And that's the gum. Look, I'm pointing at him and he's wondering what the hell's going on because I'm not looking at him. I've got, but since I said that, lots of little love heart thingies went up the screen. I do apologise, Magic. They don't recognise you as the gum, mate. Sorry, don't lick your penis. Yeah, the tendency to lick his penis.
We've got
sorry?
12 episodes. We'll see the Garm in 12 episodes.
We will, and you can see the similarities. I bet the Garm doesn't lick his penis. Magic certainly does. It does it on a regular basis.
Do
I keep having to tell him.
Have you never done Terminus?
What? I don't know. Anyway, where do we go?
I know, because I keep a list. We've never discussed Terminus.
Okay, well, we will be discussing Terminus at some point.
That's when, also known as when Nyssa gets her kit off.
Yeah. Yeah, there were some more comments that came through on the feed. Let's see if I can find them. Right then, so we had...
Red all the way.
Oh yeah, Laurie Nick says, always brown sauce. I have brown sauce on things like ham. And... Yeah, ham, really. Sausages. It's always nice on sausages as well, I find brown sauce. That's HP sauce for those living in the United Kingdom. What else? What is it? Alan T.
Houses
Butcher
of
says.
Parliament.
Yeah. Oh yes, the Houses of Parliament are on the HP sauce packet. Yeah.
No, I'm saying that's where they got the name HP from.
Oh, did they? What? Robert, you're a hive of information tonight.
What?
Wow.
What? Say it again. Where did they get the HP from?
The Houses of Parliament, Mary. Brilliant. Anyway, Alan T. Butcher says that Draconian Emperor was a Zygon in disguise. And then replies to Laurie, red all the way. He being very Labour Party tonight, isn't he, I think. And he didn't mention Brexit in that particular thing. So
I'm looking at the most of the Fifth Doctor we have never done.
Don't get too excited then, because that's what we will be doing over the next few months.
I remember when we used to come up with the randomizer and then we'd choose from the randomizer.
Yeah.
I guess a lot of us weren't all that keen on the Fifth Doctor.
Oh,
well, we haven't seen enough of it.
Doctor.
It's a completely different Doctor to the Fourth. But
the
it's the Doctor that made me a Doctor Who fan. So I
have not seen Kinda. I've not seen Florida Tuesday.
Oh, dear.
I've not seen... Time Flight, I've not seen Snake Dance, I've not seen Arc Infinity.
Sacrilege. Right then. So let's talk about the future of the next few weeks of the show. Now, next Sunday, I'm going to be exceptionally busy, and I don't think I can actually confidently say I'm going to be available to record a show, because I've got a white bridal wedding event, and then I've got to record a kids show at Serenity Theatre. I think there's a possibility I might be, but I want to be absolutely sure. So I'm going to say, sorry those people who have been enjoying the weekly episodes again, that we're going to come back on the 20th of October to do Legopolis, the story that introduces my Doctor Who fandom, and also, something else I'm going to say about Legopolis. It was the first of something or other. What was it now?
So you're saying the Fifth Doctor is your favourite, too?
My favourite Doctor, yes, because he is the Doctor that made me a Doctor Who fan.
Well, yes, we must have been being outvoted every time he did the randomizer thing.
Maybe so, I don't know. Yes, that's a fixed... I was going to say about... It was the first story... No, it's gone. But anyway, so that's... It's next week. It's... Well, not... Sorry, 2 weeks' time.
First?
2 weeks' time.
Legopolis. 2 weeks' time, the 20th. All right.
Yes. Because I don't want to commit myself to something I can't do. And hopefully Debbie will be back then. Fingers crossed.
Commit yourself to a sanatorium.
Hey?
Well, and if things change, you will let us know, right?
Well, yeah, and I do appreciate you guys coming on after it got cancelled, then they got put back on again, and they got cancelled and put back on again.
Well,
yes, Mary, I am temperamental, but that's I think that's quite well established, isn't it?
No, Robert was originally... going to be available next week as well. Would you be available the week after, Robert?
Yeah, I should be able to.
Okay.
Yeah, it would be great. I love talking with you,
but
Robert.
It will be half an hour earlier. It'll be at 7 p.m. and not 8 p.m. The clocks don't go forward again.
Told off.
Sorry, you're going to get told off.
Yes,
sometimes
don't
I
don't. Your messages, Robert. You're up then anyway, so.
I know.
Yeah, let me see the last time you were on, Robert.
Oh, there we go.
Going back,
that was
going
Layla.
Eye-rolling emoji.
You were last on in 2016.
Now, didn't he come on for one of our
the 300, he was in there.
Yeah.
But the last one you actually joined us on was Underwater Menace.
Ooh.
Wow. That was
And yeah, and
except when the DVD had come out.
I've got the records. Who all was in?
Wow, Kevin's an encyclopedia of these things.
No, you know, I was very, very pedantic.
Of course, now that we are in October, we're talking about time changes, so the time might change.
Not then, though. The clocks don't go back until the 27th of October.
That's why it's only 7.
I'll be on the Saturday night. So, yeah, I suppose it will, though.
Will that be the same for you, Robert?
No, when it goes back, that means it'll be back to 8 hours difference. Which is the way it usually is.
Not for a while yet, then. I mean, you know what I mean? It's a couple of weeks, few weeks. I still can't remember the point.
Ours changes on November 3rd. So we are going to have to be careful right in that period to make sure that we are on the same time.
Kirby, the best thing to do is always Google...
what's the time in?
Time in Isle of Wight,
No, I don't need to Google it. Echo!
Oh, God.
What time is it in London?
Oh, that worked well, then.
Yeah, no, she said it. She's just not very loud.
Oh, okay.
She said it's 8:59 p.m.
Okay. I'm still trying to remember what the point it was trying to make about Logopolis.
Tell her she's got it wrong. It's 3:59 a.m.
You know, crossing all these timelines, we're real sci-fi fans here, but we have to stay coordinated.
Damn, I can't remember what I was going to say about Logopolis. Damn, it was his first
The first time that the master was Anthony Ainley, properly.
This is I think it might have been something on the lines that it was the first time that... I'm now basically a Doctor Who fan from this point onwards, perhaps. I don't know. But there was something else. I'm sure there was something else
that
significant about it. Isn't it annoying when something comes to mind and then Kirby interrupts you and you forget it? Happens all the time. Oh, God, here we go.
This is going to be the third time that it's been discussed on the podcast.
About Logopolis.
Yeah. Although the first time was before I even was on.
it's like
episode 34.
Back in the Middle Ages.
Adam, Alicia, Isabella was on it, and Ben.
Okay. Well, I think it's time that I went back to a little bit of work and let you guys, especially you, Robert, go to sleep. And if anybody's watching the video feed at the moment, I've got two dogs appearing over my right shoulder thinking they're going to get something. They really aren't. But I will tell you,
right,
talk about, I've got very vivid memories of watching Logopolis for the first time. I was living in Wales and in the front room
really
of my...
They're really looking at you.
And living... my granddad used to lie on the settee and he used to lie down on it so heavily that the arm of the settee was bent over sideways. So it was basically a great big gap between him and... And we used to just crash out and watch evening TV. And I was really, really... Obviously, we knew Tom was going, so we were really, really looking forward to seeing Logopolis and the regeneration and everything, and it was all very, very exciting. And it was even more exciting.
Have you seen it with the Blu-ray enhancements?
No.
But they use the real Judge Rawbank?
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh,
but I think it was, I mean, obviously it was fast. I was looking forward to the next episode. That was obviously when you're looking forward to a next episode or something, you become a fan of that thing, don't you? And of course, he regenerated. You saw Peter Davison sit up. I want to see the morning. You had all that time to wait before Castrovalva came on, and that was the thing that initiated my fandom. And I think I was living back on the Isle of Wight once Castrovalva came out. I was back on the island, but it's all very exciting stuff. Looking forward to it. So that will be in 2 weeks' time. And yes, thank you, Robert, for joining us on the show this week.
Yeah.
Thank you, listeners and watchers. We've got quite a few viewers this week. We've got 5. So that's amazing. Maybe we should do 7:30 every night. But until next time, thank you for listening, watching, and taking part in the show. Please give us feedback. Goodbye.
Goodbye, fancy pants.
Bye.
The 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast is an APV Services production, sponsored by whowon.co.uk and lavazi.co.uk. We are a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the British Broadcasting Corporation, no copyright infringement intended.